Welcome to the Spartan Underground Show, your ultimate resource for everything Spartan race training. Discover what the best SGX coaches are doing to help their clients boost performance, dominate obstacles, and get through each race burpee-free. Here is your host, Mike Diebler.
All right, and welcome to episode 2 of the Spartan Race Underground Podcast. This is Mike Diebler. Thanks for joining me today. We are going to go over some great topics, helping you train a little bit more efficiently for your next Spartan race. So this is just episode number 2. If you haven't gotten a chance yet, you might want to go back and listen to episode number 1, where we go over some of the reasons we started this podcast and kind of the format and all of our different philosophies on how we are going to run this. So up first is our research review, and I have two studies that I wanted to bring up that actually relate a little bit to what we're going to talk about in our interview today, but I wanted to talk a little bit about running economy. You may not have heard of this term before, but just think of this as running efficiency. So it's really the energy expenditure at a given intensity level. So two people might be running at the same level, how much effort is one person giving versus the other? And obviously, the better your running economy, the more energy you can spare for other things like climbing a wall or a rope or whatever it may be. So our goal of training is to enhance running economy. So one study I came across is actually from this year, the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research back in March. This looked at an actually already trained population. So these were people that were actually already running pretty economically. And they wanted to find different ways to help improve running economy, to help improve performance, which obviously the more you train at something, the more difficult it's going to be. So they used a pretty unique technique, and they actually did backwards running, or retro running, you might hear. So which is just interesting. A lot of times backward running is actually used more for rehab, actually recovering from an injury or maybe even a disorder like a stroke. You'll see backwards running to help the brain fire a little bit better. But here they actually use backwards running to see if it would do anything for running economy. So they followed a 5-week program, and how they set it up was they actually had participants run on a treadmill backwards with a harness so they wouldn't fall. So they did 5 weeks of this training, and it actually did increase forward running economy. Now, it was only about 2.5% that it increased it by, but in an already trained population, that is pretty significant. So if you're somebody that's been running for a while, you are probably going to notice that you're going to hit plateaus more often. So adding backwards running to your program might actually be a good way to change it up and help improve forward running economy. Plus, if you ever have joint issues, backwards running has been shown in numerous studies to actually decrease impact on knees. So it might be just a great way to cross train. So you're getting something a little bit different in there, not constantly pounding on the knees. So I just thought that was an interesting study, how they showed that actually running backwards increased forward running economy. One other study I wanted to bring up, because as we get into our interview with Coach Lou today, he's going to talk about the pose method. And this study actually looked at the pose method in triathletes. So we'll get into what the pose method is in the interview, but it's essentially just a style of training that's looking at different techniques of running to help improve efficiency. And this study was done back in 2005 in the Journal of Sports Science. And what they found with 12 weeks of training, there was actually a decrease in stride length, which is going to be really important in actually improving cadence and reducing impact and injury, which again, we'll talk about later. And I did want to bring up, though, this study did show a decrease in running economy, which might sound like a bad thing, but what you're going to hear us talk about in this interview is sometimes you actually have to take a step back to move a few more steps forward. So even though this showed a decrease in running economy, what are the other benefits? It's going to reduce injury. It's going to eventually increase performance. 12 weeks might just not have been a long enough time for them to get the hang of this and feel comfortable and efficient with it. And the decrease wasn't anything incredibly significant. It was just a noticeable decrease there. So just something I wanted to bring up, that when you change something, you are going to expend more energy which in our sense may not be a great thing because we're trying to conserve as much energy as possible so we have more later in the race. But in that same study, as I mentioned, it decreased stride length. They also saw a decrease in vertical oscillation, which basically meant they weren't jumping up and down as much with each step, which when you think about it, it's pretty clear that's going to decrease impact on the joint. So while there may be a detriment to running economy, when we think big picture, when they get the hang of this running, their economy is going to improve and they're going to be less likely to get hurt. So two great studies on improving running economy, which is should really be a crucial part of your training, trying to improve running economy. Like we mentioned in our first episode, that's one of the things that we're trying to improve, as well as VO2 max and lactate threshold. So give backwards running a try in your program, and then you might want to look up the POSE method after this interview and see if that might be something you might be interested in as well. All right, next up is our resource of the week. So each podcast, we're going to go over a cool resource, a tool, or something else that you can implement in your daily life to help your training improve. And this one is a really simple one that you can get, and it's free, which is awesome. And it has to do with electronics. So we're going to talk a little bit about sleep and recovery here, because that's going to be a crucial part of your training. You've probably heard of circadian rhythms and basically how we've evolved because of electronics and artificial lights has actually changed our rhythm. So typically we should be going to sleep when the sun goes down and then waking up when the sun rises, but I'm sure you know that that probably never happens due to lots of different things. So we're up late at night and we're watching TV, we're on our phones or iPads, computers, whatever it might be, and we're exposed to different types of light, one of them being blue light. So blue light is really beneficial during the day. It actually improves mood and alertness and reaction time and all these different things, but it actually might be damaging later in the day, messing your circadian rhythms, which is going to be a big deal. And they've actually seen exposure to blue light or other, and not just blue light, but this is one that's gotten a lot of attention, but other types of shades of light and having it impact a lot of different things and not just performance. They've seen certain types of cancers are actually more common when people say like work a night shift, right? When they're up in the middle of the night and just messing with these circadian rhythms. We see actually glucose levels increase and potentially leading to diabetes or leptin levels decreasing, which is a hormone that actually tells you when you're full. So when that decreases, you're going to be hungrier. And then you're going to, again, see blood sugar levels rise. So lots of different problems arise when these rhythms are out of whack. So we want to do our best to obviously making sure we're getting enough sleep, right? When we are starting to wind down for the day, we should have a release of melatonin, which is going to help us fall asleep. But when we are exposed to these blue lights, we actually see melatonin levels decrease, and it's going to make it harder for us to fall asleep, or we wake up less restful sleep, which means we're going to wake up not feeling refreshed. And if we train again, it's just this cascade of events that's going to lead to poor performance, under recovery, and overtraining. So really simple thing you can do, if you go to the website justgetflux.com. So this Flux program, basically you can use it on your computer, and it is going to decrease the brightness and actually eliminate the blue shade, blue light that we would normally be exposed to from our computers. If you have a iPhone or iPad, there's actually a new feature on some of the newer operating systems. Now, I couldn't tell you which number operating system that would be, but if you just check it up in the settings under displays, you'll see something called night shift, and you can just turn that on, and it'll use your GPS and know when the sun goes down, it's actually going to activate this, and when the sun comes up, it'll turn it off, and it kind of looks like your computer's broken. It's going to change the shade. It's going to be a lot more dimmer. Yes, it makes it a little bit more difficult to see, but it's definitely well worth it to help reduce some of these effects from these artificial lights that we are exposed to. So try those two sites out. Again, I'll put the links in the show notes, justgetflux.com, and then the night shift on your iPhone or iPad is an easy way. It's literally just a switch that you can turn on and off. But give it a try and just see if you do have issues sleeping, if that actually gives you a little bit of improvement there. All right, now we're going to get into our interview with fellow SGX coach Albert Liu. Albert's also located in Southern California, not too far from where I am in San Diego, just a little bit north of here in Orange County. And along with being a great SGX coach, the reason I wanted to get him on here is because he helps so many of his clients improving their running skills. And we don't often train running and focus on technique. We often just get out there and start running, which, you know, might be a good start. But if you're not running correctly, just adding more and more miles and more intensity might actually be making things worse and leading to injuries down the road. So Albert is a pose method technique specialist and helps people learning this specific style of training and has really seen some awesome results with it and has given me tips, and I've worked with him before and it's really made a difference in my running program. So I wanted to get him on here and share some of his insights on running and how it might benefit you in your next Spartan race. This is Mike. I'm here with Coach Albert Liu. How you doing today?
Awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us. I think we're going to cover some great things that people are really going to get some great insight into training for their next race. So before we get too into it, do you mind just giving us a brief bio, let us know a little bit about yourself and kind of where you're coming from?
Sure. Thanks, Mike, for having me. So right now I am a Spartan SGX coach. I'm also a pose method running technique specialist. I'm coming in with a CrossFit background as well.
All right. Sorry, you just broke up a little bit there.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. So, tell us a little bit about your first Spartan race. Just, somebody out there is listening to this and they just have no idea what they're getting into. I'm sure you were once in that situation as well. So, just kind of walk us through how you trained, what it felt like, how you ended up on the other side.
Sure. So I found Spartan racing after running 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, even a marathon. And I found that, you know, coming from the CrossFit world and laying down a foundation of fitness for football myself, I found that it was really applicable to doing Spartan racing. So I chose to do the challenge and saw how I could do with it. And apparently I was kind of ready for it as far as lifting stuff and carrying stuff, pulling stuff in a race. As far as running, I was okay with it too. But yeah, it was a shot in the gut too, because you had to do all those things really good. I'm doing real well. And, you know, a lot of the hill running and elevation training, that was probably one of the first times that I had done something like that intensely. My first one was Temecula. I think it was 2014, something like that. It was pretty warm, and I mean, for any first time Spartan racer, like my first time, then you're dealing with the elements, you're dealing with dirt, you're dealing with other people in the race. It's a great time though.
Awesome. So I have to ask, how many burpees did you have to do your first race?
I think surprisingly not many. I think I maybe had done 60 or even 90.
Oh, so not bad. Did you hit that spear the first time?
No, I've missed every single time. So I've done 5 races, I've missed every single time.
Uh-oh. All right. So we know your weakness, right? We know what to work on. I think we've talked before. I had a similar start. I was 0-3 with my first 3 races, and then since then I haven't missed. So it's practice. Yeah, I'm going to rub it in a little bit there for you. Awesome. So one of the main reasons I'm really excited to have you on here to share with everybody is your background in running. We've talked before. Obviously, we know about the spear toss. We know about the walls, the rope climb, and all the most common obstacles we're going to see. But we often neglect the biggest obstacle we're going to face, which is running in general. So you mentioned that you're a pose method specialist. If you could just, what is the pose method and kind of how you found it and why should we know anything about this?
Yeah, sure. The pose method is a method, teaching method for helping everyone, anyone, run better. There was a Soviet era coach way back when for the Soviet Olympic team, and he was tasked with helping their athletes perform better. Specifically, I think, with running too. So what he did was he filmed thousands of these runners, of these people running, and he saw patterns. And through all these patterns, he saw different positions, or basically one position. Everyone, regardless how slow, how fast they run, what style they run, they hit a certain position. And that's their running position, or the figure four that a lot of people talk about. So what he devised was a certain way of teaching it and setting a standard for people to work on. So just like if you're learning how to do a push-up or a pull-up or a squat, there's a certain position you need to be in, like at the top of the squat, bottom of the squat, holding that same position way through that whole squat. Same thing with running, where you're trying to hold position and switch between your point of support of one leg to another. And so the POSE method is again, a way to teach someone how to run better. And so I found it after attending a CrossFit endurance seminar. They used the POSE method in that seminar and through all the coaching to help others run better, especially CrossFitters out there who don't know how to run, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I found it through that. I took the test they had, POSE method has, and I was certified from then. And since then, I've really worked on the coaching aspect of it. After working on myself, obviously trying to get better at that. I've attended numerous CrossFit endurance seminars, and I've worked with some of the other master coaches that are with POSE method right now. And so I started applying that at the gym I was at before, these last couple of gyms I was at, and helping out others, you know, private clients and whatnot, and now going to the OCR world, trying to help out people being ripped off the couch in the smart world and help them run better too. What they should know about running, or why they should do this is, if you're gonna run the way your body designed to do, and if correctly, you will feel less pain. Right, so there's a lot of people complaining about knee pain, ankle pain, shin pain, hip pain, all kinds of issues going on with that. You'll feel less of that. You should be able to run faster and longer based on that. You got to take running as a skill, and you got to master that skill, and take it as basically a lifelong journey.
Awesome. So just to step back a second, touching on pain, because I think that's something a lot of people are going to be able to relate to, because maybe they don't want to run because it hurts, or, you know, injuries pop up when they're running. So if you practice this method, is it something where if maybe you had knee pain in the before, it could just potentially go away with better running technique?
Yeah, sure. So when we talked about Dr. Romanov, Dr. Nicholas Romanov, who set the standard of how a person moves or runs, right? Any little deviation from that standard will show or will result in pain, basically, or any little, or the feeling of not being light or running on clouds, or a lot of those feelings, a lot of those words are described by people when they like change, when they finally know how to run correctly or are coached to do that. So you'll feel heavy starting out. If you don't know, obviously, you haven't been really coached that around, you'll feel heavy, you'll feel pounding, you'll feel pain all throughout the body. But people will feel out of breath, and it's hard for them to breathe right when they do this too.
Gotcha.
So basically, it's up to the coach, up to the person to go through this journey properly, to learn this properly, and they will progress. They will feel less pain. They will be able to breathe better.
Gotcha. Yeah, and it sounds like this might be something that sometimes you take a step back to take, you know, 10 steps forward, where
yes.
You're a little uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah, and I think one thing I've learned from going to seminars and whatnot, and trying to become a better coach is this one asking about mechanics, consistency, and intensity. So making sure you're moving right, making sure you're
Sorry, I just lost you a second. Can you just repeat what you're just saying? Sorry. With
okay,
mechanics?
Yeah. So the one thing I've learned from coaching, from learning how to become a better coach and trainer, is making sure the athlete or anyone in general is moving correctly first with good mechanics, and then making sure they're consistently moving correctly before applying intensity or applying more volume, applying more speed. Now, someone who goes down that path can get better, and it takes time. And like I said earlier, it's a lifelong journey. And if one can really work on the skill, master the skill at these really short distances and slower speeds, start to work themselves up from there, then they should be in good shape down the road.
Okay. And I know this next question is probably impossible to answer, but what kind of results could, like, you know, weeks, months, I'm sure it depends on the person, but, you know,
yeah.
How quickly could you see improvements in your running techniques?
If you want to frame it in terms of how they feel after being introduced to it, I mean, I could have someone feel way better in an hour,
mm-hmm.
on drills and whatnot, but it really takes a good, let's say another up to 6 weeks to work on drilling, work on intervals to ingrain the habit, ingrain the technique,
mm-hmm.
Before they apply more mileage or more speed. So,
gotcha.
There's a certain month to 6 week time period where there's that little break in period, if you will.
Gotcha. Yeah. And 6 weeks is not very long in the grand scheme of things. That's pretty quick. I know a lot of the drills and things where we can't show because this is just an audio recording. But there's one thing that the last time I met with you and we were going over some of these drills that I don't know why it clicked for me, but it just made sense and it was something I could do right away and feel. And it was really about the hamstrings and involving that pull. Could you just talk about something like that? Because I just think most people don't think about their hamstrings too much during running, except to like stretch them to overstride or something like that. So for me, that was just such a good point that you made, so I don't know if you could just kind of talk us through it right now.
Sure. So the three basic principles that Dr. Romanoff laid out on the stand was when you're running, you need to be in a good position. You need to be stable in your position or have a stable spine. And from there, you need to fall in that same good position, taking advantage of gravity to take you where you want to go. And then also pulling. You want to pull your feet straight above the ground. Now, what you need to use to pull that foot off the ground is your posterior chain, which includes your glutes, your hamstrings, right? So what you're talking about with the hamstrings is that's basically the primary muscle you're feeling when you're pulling your foot off the ground. Everything that we're doing in gym, any kind of training where we're doing, like, say, lunges, squats, deadlifts, we're training our posterior chain, aren't we? So why not we use the big posterior chain that we're training in the gym outside on runs? So when we're running, then we're using our hamstrings, glutes, right, to pull our foot off the ground running. That's basically a distilled version of what it is. And there's obviously, like you said, lots of drills to work on and get this feeling down.
Yeah.
And we'll go over that at some point.
Yeah. And what we'll do too is I'm going to put some links up on the website. So for anybody listening, if you want to see some of these drills, plus I'm going to put some links up for the pose method so you can just learn more about it. If you are interested in that, find a coach like Albert near you. Just go to the website, www.spartanunderground.com/podcasts, and you'll see the notes for this as well as all of our other podcasts on there. So I just want to make that quick note. I know it's hard to describe some of these exercises, but just when we went over that hamstring one, it just made perfect sense, and I really noticed a difference right away in my own running, which was awesome. Next thing I wanted to talk to you about was mileage. So when you're programming running, what are your thoughts on, obviously it's going to depend on the distance we're training for, but let's just say for, you know, a sprint, we'll start there. So if I know I'm going to have to run roughly 5 miles in the race, what kind of mileage should I be putting in?
I think it depends on the Okay. Coming. Depends on what their skill is at that point. Let's say they're a Hunter McIntyre or some other elite athlete out there who can handle that 5 miles. They can probably run the whole 5 miles the whole time, right? Mm-hmm. But the person who is just starting out, who's quote unquote ripped off the couch already by Spartan, who hasn't been running, it's going to be pretty tough starting out to run the whole time, right? So I think it depends. If you take that entry level person right off the street and work with them for that 6 weeks, work on a technique, you can get them on a 5K training plan. As far as the running goes, that will work perfectly for that.
Okay. What if we go to a little more extreme? Let's say somebody is, let's just say an average runner, athlete that's done a race before and they want to take on the beast. So we know 13, 15 miles, somewhere in that range, they're going to have to run. Should that be the distance of their training runs? What should we be doing there?
So what I've learned from CrossFit Endurance, and now it's called Power Speed Endurance, they've used strength and conditioning to help runners basically athletes get better in their sport. It requires sport-specific training during a week. So for us OCR athletes, right, we're training specific skills related to the obstacle courses, the racing. So that means a lot of incline, decline runnings, hill sprints, whatnot, right, and carrying stuff, pulling stuff, multi-rig, rope climbs, all that kind of stuff, right, in addition to running. So running intervals during the week, so a basic week, for example, in the CrossFit Endurance model was to run a short interval one day, another couple days later to run a long interval day, and then on the weekends run a tempo or time trial run, if we're talking about running. So the short intervals you do, like at a track, you do short intervals like run 200s until your form breaks, something like that. Run 100s until your form breaks. Long intervals in terms of, do X number of sets of 1 mile runs or 800 meter repeats. So that'd be your second day during the week. And then on the weekends, you do your longer runs. You test your skill, where you would do a tempo run, like a certain percentage of your last mile run or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or your time trial, where you are testing yourself. You are actually put under race conditions and running as fast as you can for a certain X number of distance, just to establish benchmarks. So you go from week to week to week and you use those benchmarks that you establish in earlier weeks, and you base your percentages and your intervals off that. So someone who is training for a beast like that, they can basically apply a half marathon training plan like that, with that kind of structure, combined with the specific training and other strength conditioning in the gym itself, to prepare for that race. Let's see. Yeah, so it requires a lot of strength work in the gym, right? So doing all the exercises we talked about before, all the ones that strengthen your post, your chain, your midline, your core, right? Make sure you're strong enough to handle that volume and that miles and those miles and the speed, actually.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah, definitely. And then, so if we are training, a half marathon program or whatever we're following for a beast race, is it necessary on a regular basis on those tempo runs or longer runs to be hitting close to 15 miles, or do you think that's necessary? Is that overkill?
It might be overkill. So if someone is running well already, who is running, quote unquote, correctly, they can take it out to the 15-mile mark, but there really is no need, because at that point in the race, 10 miles in, you can finish it at that point,
mm-hmm.
I think, if you're able to run well for 10 miles. So I think the max, for example, for a marathon training plan, the max number of miles that someone will run towards the end would be 13.1.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily low volume, it's doing quality work to make sure your position's good, make sure you can hold position for as long as you can.
Gotcha. I want to go back to something that they were talking about, setting those benchmarks. Is that something you feel should be done on like a weekly basis, a monthly basis? How often should we be, in terms of running, we'll keep it to that, for our running workouts,
right. right.
Should we be kind of testing ourselves?
I think as much as you can, testing yourselves in terms of how able can you perform the skill, right? So, well, actually, every time you train, every time someone trains, they should be establishing, they should be recording stuff. Okay? So recording what your result was on that workout, according to how long it took you to do something, according to how many reps you did of this thing, or X number of rounds of this little training session. So in terms of running then, like you can break it down, let's say you're programmed to run as many 100-meter repeats as you can, making sure you finish your time as within 3 seconds of each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you kind of get away from, you know, you finish more than three seconds away from each other. So at the point you stop and you figure out, okay, how many runs did I really take? Did I do? You ran 8. Okay, good. Note that down for today. You know, once you retest it, whenever you do it, and whenever you want to do it again, you base it off that benchmark, off that result that you did a week ago, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically test yourself against that every time. Now, I think that should be the way to go. I mean, in order to progress, right, you need to know where you are, you know where you want to get to. So you need some type of result to let you know if you're going the right direction or not.
Gotcha. Cool. One more running specific. I meant to ask this when we were talking about kind of that running technique and method. What about cadence? Is there a particular cadence, or is that something we should pay attention to? How many foot contacts per minute or anything like that? Or is it just depends on the person?
Yeah. Yeah. What we've seen so far is, that magic number, 180 beats per minute, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So at that 180 beats per minute or 90 beats per minute on one leg, you're actually taking advantage of a couple things. You're taking advantage of ground reaction force. So when you're putting your foot down, there's a force going in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Also a ground reaction force, the same magnitude of that force coming up, right, allowing that going into your foot, correct? So there's that going on, and there's also muscle tendon elasticity. So one of those elastic bands we use in the gym where you kind of pull apart and snaps back again, or rubber bands, right? There's certain property like that in our body, in our muscles and tendons, so specifically like through Achilles into our calf, into our posterior chain, right? There's a certain property there. It's been shown that at that threshold, at that 180, you're actually taking advantage of both of that. So if you're able to stay above that threshold, above that 180 beats per minute, 90 beats per minute on one leg, you're actually being more efficient about it. And you're being safer too. So you're using that natural spring in your body, that arch in your foot, to be efficient. The better you can run at higher cadences, the less time you'll be spending on the ground, right, where people get hurt, right? So
mm-hmm.
The only place you get hurt running is on the ground, right?
Yeah.
Instead of limiting your contact on the ground, so you limit chance of getting hurt. Kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm sure if people started to actually like time this and count their steps per minute, they would see that they're probably way below that, because we see so many people just overstriding and taking these huge steps and thinking, to run faster, I need to take these big, big steps. And that's where they get into trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, cool. I just wanted to go kind of more, a little more rapid fire on a couple questions and get your feedback and input. If we can leave the listeners with one tool or resource that you think they shouldn't be without, whether it's an app, clothing, sneakers, training tool, anything out there, what's one thing you think everybody should have in their arsenal?
I'll give you two. How about that?
All right. Sounds good.
A watch and a notebook or some type of logbook.
Okay. Any watch brand or capabilities in particular?
Something that takes time.
So,
time.
So that shouldn't be too hard to find.
Yeah, that and also a logbook. So you always, like I said before, log your results.
All right. Awesome. Cool. What's your go-to either pre-workout or post-workout fueling? You know, whether it's a supplement, a real food, whatever.
Throughout the day, actually, I'll rewind back. So I make sure to meal prep. I make sure to get all my food I need for the next, for the upcoming week. At the end of the week, I go grocery shopping and whatnot. Then I lay out how much or what I'm going to eat during the week, during the days of the week. And I actually bulk buy everything. I make everything at once on a Sunday or Saturday. And I prepare all my meals for every day during the week. So when I go, when I leave the house, I'm going to have four or five things, different things of Tupperware in my bag when I grab and go. So most of my food that I'm eating right now is just whole foods.
Okay.
Real food. Any supplements I take right now are fish oil and another product called 3Fuel. It's basically a protein, fat, and carb. It's a supplement. And I've taken it before big events like Spartan Racing,
mm-hmm.
and even after workouts or after training sessions.
Cool.
And after races as well.
Awesome.
Basically, I'm staying pretty clean.
All right, awesome, and I'll put a link to that too, so people can check it out on the site. So don't forget www.spartanunderground.com/podcast, so you can see any of the links that we might be talking about if you want to learn more info from there. Okay, let's say so we have a little bit of a disadvantage. We tend to have more cool training tools and obstacle type things at our disposal. What are some tips that you would give somebody that's just training at home or at like a regular gym to help basically train for obstacles without having obstacles to practice on?
Sure. Definitely work on your body weight movements. So you can call this gymnastics, but yeah, body weight movements where we're moving your body in certain positions. Some of the basic movements to really master are like the push-up, pull-up, air squat, lunge, what else? Yeah, you basically master those as best you can, because you're going to use your body in the race. Now, as far as in terms of the other implements and other tools and weights out there on the race, you have to find a facility or maybe acquire them along the way in your training and work on those. There's something called the theoretical hierarchy of development, and it's like a pyramid. So if you can picture this, we'll probably have a link to this too, right?
Yeah.
So a pyramid, at the base of it, you have nutrition. The next tier up from that would be metabolic conditioning, or your heart and lungs, making sure that that's running well, working right before you do anything, right? On top of that, the next tier up would be gymnastics, or body weight skills. On top of that, weightlifting. Not weightlifting in terms of manipulating and moving around and doing all kinds of things with external objects. So making sure your body's working right, making you move your body right before you move other stuff. And on top of that would be sport, the very top of that pyramid of the hierarchy. Making sure everything from the bottom up is sound, you can do well before you apply to a certain sport. So in terms of OCR then, making sure you're eating well, you have that good foundation, making sure your heart and lungs are working right, that you can move your body well, and then also move other stuff well before applying it to our sport. That makes sense.
Yeah. So basically, just those that are better athletes, better conditioned, just generally speaking, tend to do pretty well in these races. So
exactly,
it sounds like a good starting point.
Yeah, cool. So if you want to really put it in really simple terms, then yeah, work on your cardio, right? Work on your body weight skills.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, and then last question. So... let's say you're, or what's one piece of advice you would give somebody who's going to be training for their very first race? If you're just going to give them the most important thing they need to think about right now, what would it be?
Is this your end goal? is this going to be life and death? Because consider training, consider fitness, consider health, consider your health a lifelong journey. And if you're going to this thinking that I gotta do this, I have to do this in order to, you know, satisfy your ego, you know, consider just going into this as an experience. This will be your stepping stone into some really awesome worlds. And try not to think so serious about it. Try not to take it so seriously. Just have fun with it. I think people lose sight of that. People lose sight of having fun. And yeah, going to having, trying to have fun and as an experience. And if you really want help with it, try to find a coach who specializes. And in Spartan World, Spartan SGX coaches, perfect resource for you guys to try to reach out to. Since we've gone through the gauntlet, we know what's going on. Yeah. We know how, what to experience and whatnot, and we always pass it down to you. So yeah, have fun and find a coach.
Awesome. I think those are two perfect pieces of advice, because I think people realize that the Spartan races are about the experience. I mean, obviously, it's fun to push yourself and challenge yourself and get through these obstacles, but people always talk about the experience more than anything else. So, perfect. So, hey, how should our listeners contact you or learn more about you if they have questions or just want to kind of see what you're up to?
Sure. I have a business page on Facebook. It's Move Well, all one word, Move Well Fitness Services. That's a little company I started up last year to help people with their fitness, even their specifically their running. I'm on Instagram and as well. I think it's also Move Well Fitness Services, all one word. Like personally, you can find me too. Albert Lou, you can find me somehow. maybe through the business page. Also on Instagram is ALU388, Alpha Lima Uniform 388. Yeah, feel free to reach out to me. We can work with each other if you want.
All right.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Awesome. Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on. I know our listeners are going to get a ton of info from this. Don't forget, check out the website, spartanunderground.com/podcast, to check out all the links that we're talking about, and that'll include Albert's links. So if you do want to reach out to him or just follow him on Instagram, you definitely can do that. So thanks so much, and I'm sure we're going to get you back on here or on the website going over some of the more running drills that we can put people through.
You got it.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, guys, that's it for today. Again, this is Mike Diebler with Spartan Race Underground Podcast. Don't forget to check out our website, spartanunderground.com/podcast, and you can see any of the links that we talked about. Also, don't forget, if you like the show, have any comments, please rate us in iTunes. Give us feedback. We want to keep doing this, but we want to make sure people are getting benefit from it. If there's any topics or anything that you want us to cover or learn more about, feel free to email me at info@spartanunderground.com. All right, until next time, keep training hard.